So I think it's really good to understand the key points of the culture. What does your competitor do? So what does the market look like? And also find out those differences, because just activating a new platform or a new shop or an office in that country is different. They walk a different path. They click on different things. The colors are different. And I think the other thing is, which we are still working through as well as WeTransfer, is you cannot just translate a platform. You really need to localize it. So use the right words.
Welcome to the International Expansion Podcast. My name is Ramsey Pryor, and I spent the past 5 years taking one of Silicon Valley's fastest growing startups into new markets all around the world as head of international expansion and sales. Tech companies are able to expand overseas faster than ever before, but there's quite a lot that goes into getting it right. And each new market has its own unique and fascinating set of quirks and challenges. The best way to prepare is to learn from people who have been there before. So I started this podcast to gather the best practices from tech's most admired startups. We cover their successes and the things they got right, as well as their mistakes and learnings, all so that you can benefit from their hindsight as you take your company global. Thanks for listening. And if you or your company is looking for guidance on your expansion journey, or if you have feedback or suggestions for future episodes, please visit portofentrypartners.com and send us a note. Welcome to another episode of the International Expansion Podcast. Today's discussion is focused specifically on entering France. And I'm really happy to have Natasha Chamoulot as my guest. Natasha is Chief Advertising Officer of WeTransfer, a position she's held since July of 2020, having joined as Vice President of Sales in 2017. Before WeTransfer, Natasha spent 3 years at Facebook as Head of Sales and Client Solutions for Benelux and Central Europe. Prior to that, she worked in a variety of leadership roles, including eBay Classified and Marketplots, ranging from sales to growth and product innovation. Natasha and I were introduced when I began asking around about companies that had done a world-class job of entering the French market, which many know is one of the most challenging in Europe and in the world for foreign companies in terms of localization, building the right strategy, and winning the hearts and minds of customers and partners in the country. So we're here today to dive into WeTransfer's story and the approach that allowed them to thrive as a foreign company in the French market. Natasha, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Ramsey. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm very excited. This is a market that I get a lot of questions about, and I really was hoping to find someone like you who could talk about the things that went into your French entry strategy and all the things you learned and the advice you would give other companies. But before we dive into all of that, I wanted to start by just asking you a little bit about yourself, your personal story. Where did you grow up and what led you to what you're doing today?
I'm Natasha. I work at WeTransfer now, but long, long time ago, I was born and raised in a small village in the Netherlands. So I'm very Dutch. My last name isn't. That's my husband's last name. Spend a lot of time playing outside, as we did then, with a father who was a police agent. So I was very like exploring and investigating everything. But also thinking about that, he was the one that I think taught me about like cultures and how people behave differently and how important it is to listen to everyone, accept everybody's culture, but also think of them in a different scene setting. So people can have different food preferences. They can speak differently. They look different, of course. Thinking about that more and more, I think that was sort of the base of really being interested in different cultures and how people behave and speak. We went, as many others, to France a lot of times back then, camping. So drove that like 12 to 15 or 20 hours all the way to the south. That was my first meet with France, but it was very centered about baguettes and swimming in the ocean. So I haven't been to university or anything. I kind of grew up in the world of internet by doing and by getting a lot of opportunities. And at one point I ended up at Marktplaats, so the eBay classified site in the Netherlands. And I think this is where my sort of international experience started to accelerate. So initially I was focused on the Netherlands, but got the amazing opportunity to move to Denmark, a little bit up north. And for Americans, it might be very like it's only 7 kilometers, but it's another culture. It's another language. And everything was different. So I was the odd one out, not speaking the language, but it gave me a wealth of sort of knowledge and experience about how it was as a foreigner in another culture. And after moving back to the Netherlands, I got in contact with Facebook, who dragged me to Ireland. Again, not that far, although there's two seas in between. But yet again, it's an island culture. It's much smaller, very, very nice people. And that was at Facebook, where I was part of the Benelux team, which is Dutch and Belgium. But working together with the French, with the Germans, with pretty much all Europe. And I think that has been one of the best schools of culture ever. And particularly the French and I had some really good conversations. It's a direct country and a slightly indirect country. It's high context, no context. So that was a very interesting time, but also a very open conversation. So I was taught by them and the other way around, as for all the other cultures. So I think my 3 years experience there really gave me that solid foundation to really think more about how to approach one market or the other, with also the nice opportunity to have a really nice set of mentors around me if I get stuck. But that in a nutshell, eBay or a marketplace and Facebook are everything around data. It's mobile a lot. When I went to WeTransfer, for the people that don't know that yet, take a look. It's massive desktop focused. We are very data lean, so everything is different there, but gave me the opportunity to help grow that business and accelerate from the advertising perspective, which went really well in the US. So now we're conquering Europe. And our focus for this year will be France, where we are opening up in a week or two with our first on the ground staff, which comes with very particular reasons because it's France. Yeah, that in a nutshell, I'm now chief advertising officer, as we call it. So that means focusing on everything advertising with my team. Also a very international team. So headquarters is Amsterdam. We build out a team in London, which is now 25 people. We moved across the ocean. So we have teams in New York and LA. And as a result of the pandemic, in all the states in between, the next up is France to grow there. 45 people conquering the world. And we can speak about that a little bit more later. But that team is also built to make sure that we address all the most important markets out there. Do we have French-speaking people? Definitely.
Okay. Wow. Thanks for all that background. And it's a rich background, both in terms of exposure to different markets, people, languages, cultures, but also a super rich background in terms of experience at some of the biggest internet-based companies out there. So let me start with a broad question based on what you've learned so far. But if I were the founder of a tech company that was considering going into France based on the fact that it's a really big market, everything that, you think about Europe and you think about the big countries and the big markets, France always jumps out. But thinking about preparing for entering France, what are some of the biggest differences that people need to be aware of up front when they're thinking about going into France and the things that you guys have been thinking about?
So that's a very good question. So I think it's a huge country. It's over 65 million people, I think. And it's very internet savvy. They have money to spend. It's one of those markets within Europe, I think, that you kind of have to conquer at one point if you really want to grow your business. But it's not a country where you can just sort of get in a car, go there and start doing business. I think what we learned as we transfer, but I also picked up in previous roles, you have to prepare. You really, as for any country, actually, you have to sort of see what's out there. What does your competitive landscape look like? But even more important, to really dive into the key areas on culture. So how to do business in France is, I think, the first question you need to ask yourself and to not make assumptions. In most cases, all the basic stuff actually works. It's the cheesy stuff that actually makes sense. But it's really hard to really understand and really go under the skin of the French market. And I think that's the best starting point. So I used the book, The Culture Map, from Erin Myers a lot to really get that baseline understanding of what the market is about. And she uses that sort of real life little conversations, or puts it in perspective, that gives a lot of insight in how tough it can be. And for instance, already high context, low context, that's not something that just using more words brings you there. So I think it's really good to understand the key points of the culture what does your competitor do? So what does the market look like? And also find out those differences, because just activating a new platform or a new shop or an office in that country is different. They walk a different path. They click on different things. The colors are different. And I think the other thing is, which we are still working through as well as WeTransfer, is you cannot just translate a platform. You really need to localize it. So use the right words, use the right sentences, use the right approach. So it's really good to sort of connect with companies that have experience in that space if you don't have that yourself. So I used to work with WeGrow, who is also specialized and has French people within the company to really sort of talk me through what it is that we need to start with. When I started at WeTransfer, the French market had some advertisers, but it was Dutch people working in a French market, and that just doesn't do it. You really have to understand what relationship building is. So relationship building in France is some of the starting points. So you have to think about how to build a relation. If you are in the UK, you take people out for drinks on Friday afternoon, and that's just beer and a pub, and it's fun. You don't do that stuff in France. You really build it slowly. You go for the coffee, you go for another coffee, you go for a nice lunch, and then you need to figure out what to talk about and what not to talk about. So it's business and not yet personal. And at one point, you can add some personal insights as well, but you have to take it slowly and really sort of see what's happening on the other side of the table. And I think that that takes time. Like, building a business in France is not a start January 1st, and it's thriving at the end of the year. You have to take, like, depending on your business, a couple of years to make it work and to make it grow. It's not an overnight country. But... And that's the good thing. And I love seeing those moments that if you start to build those relations at the right time, in the right way, you see the change. Like, at one point, you feel that you cross that bridge and you're friends pretty much. And then you're kind of friends for life. And that's really amazing. Having said that, I'm now literally, I asked myself earlier this week, do you build friendship with a person or do you build a friendship with a company? So we're working with a lot of amazing brands in the French market. We have very strong relationships after so many years, but there's a lot of movement going on in the media world, or in the world for that matter. So now my big question is indeed, like, what happens if people move from one company to another? Do you remain, is that relationship still there or did that move to that other country? So I'm also still learning. So that is definitely something to focus on. And what normally works with, I think also in normal life, is you get to know people through other people. So what we did around 4 years ago when we just started to focus on France is, where can we find our sort of our a little lighthouse? We kind of used the Eiffel Tower strategy. We all know the Eiffel Tower in Paris. And we were sort of thinking, if we can find that one client, that one person, that one agency that kind of sort of has that highest on top of the Eiffel Tower that everybody can see, maybe we can find sort of that, let's say, snowball effect to go from one person to another, because you need to be introduced. That's much better than just picking up the phone to call. And we were very lucky to find that sort of first starting client. And after good meals and good connections and a lot of convincing and a lot of investment, you have to really invest before you actually start doing business. That snowball effect started literally the day after we ran the first campaign. So that was, well, hope is not a strategy, but it was the hope. And it turned out to be a really nice strategy. And that sort of started, I think, our journey in France, where we've grown like the first couple of years, more than triple digits. So this was a really nice accelerate. And we're not even there. Like, we still have a lot of opportunity. So we'll continue to grow. Yeah, I think that is kind of how we started and how to focus. But as I said, it is investing. You need to invest a lot. They will test you and they will want you to show them that you are here for them. So we're working advertising, so that comes with long hours and late hours, but they expect you to be always on. So even if you want to sort of balance work and life a little bit, that's tough in the beginning. But it's fine. I think if you go in knowing that, it's a lot easier to work around it. And if you go in knowing that it works that way, I think it's also easier to accept that's the case. Yeah.
So much of what you said is reminiscent of my experience and things that I've heard about markets in Asia, especially Japan, where relationships are vital, introductions must have, and the strategy of going in and getting, as you mentioned, or as you've referred to, the Eiffel Tower, the early big brands that give you the halo of the local brand that people are comfortable with, opens a lot of doors. So that's really interesting to hear your experience there. You talked about two themes that I just wanted to follow up on a little bit more. One of them was the importance of relationship building and, you know, your question about do those relationships carry over from one company to the next? Are you building relationships with a person or a company? I think that's an interesting question. With regard to that, you've been on the B2B and the B2C side. And so what I'd like to talk or get your thoughts on is if you're B2B, what does relationship building look like in terms of direct customers? What are things that direct customers would expect or would be put off by if you're kind of selling directly to them? And when talking to partners or agencies, in the case of an advertising-based company, same question, what are the things that would be normal and necessary? And what are the things that would be striking the wrong chord within France?
That's a good question. I think what's kind of blew me away. So in the Netherlands, we're quite flat, I think. There's definitely levels, but it's not that set, I think. And definitely WeTransfer as a company is also very flat as a company. So everybody can add, everybody has something to say, and we all listen. And I think what kind of blew me away is that that's not necessarily the case in France. So you really have to understand kind of your level, their levels, and how that works together. And I'm not saying it's that strict, but ultimately, there was that moment that I heard my colleague who was working in the French market, senior director, said, like, do you actually know who I am? You need to put me through to that other senior person because I'm very senior on this side. And sort of, I was impressed by that you can actually pull your rank to push that through. And that is accepted and it's actually needed, I think, to have the right conversation. And I think that luckily I didn't see that happen in sort of personal life. They're all the same. But doing business, they expect you to sometimes pull your rank, but they also expect you to push back. Like, I have really tough conversations in France about rates, about how we work together. But that's also what they expect from me because that shows a level of professionalism, I think, that they're looking for, which actually is a really healthy way of doing business, even though I would maybe use a different approach slightly. But I think it's having those crucial conversations to really test each other to get further. You have to do that there, which we're not always used to. I think on what you said, B2C, so from a WeTransfer perspective, that would be the users using our platform. There you see you have to hit the right tone. So it needs to be built in their way. I'm trying to sort of visualize. And the only way I can think of now is the roads. Like every country here in the Netherlands, I don't know how that works in the US, but you kind of know when you go to the next country because the roads will be different. Exit points will be longer or shorter. Signs indeed will be different. The colors of the signs will be different. And I think that applies as well to sort of how you build your systems and your platforms. Like you need to sort of make it natural for them where the next exit is to the next page. If you do that, it should be a very smooth transition and then they like you. And I think WeTransfer is a very well-known, respected brand in the Netherlands, in France. And I think it's also because there's a lot of friendship and trust involved. So if I use it and I use our system to send a file to you, Ramsey, then you kind of trust me in using a system that actually is trustworthy, security-wise good enough or quality-wise good enough that if I use it, you can also use it. So there's some kind of weird safety or trust in between friends. And I think that in the B2C is something you need to sort of also remember that if they use your platform, they trust you to do the right thing, but also make their lives easier. So there's a lot of common working in B2C and B2B, but then B2B is a lot tougher when it's needed. But again, you also receive really nice WhatsApp messages after a campaign went well or after something that the rest of the team managed to do well. It's nice to get that little like recognition as well. A little bit in secret, but that's fine. So yeah, and I think that that kind of links also into your first question.
Yeah, there's a lot of deep questions that come out. We won't have time to cover them all, but let me just ask one more quick question on this topic before we move on. You talked about the need to use the right words and the right sentences. And I think that's probably true for B2B and B2C, but probably especially important for B2C and interfaces and as you localize. Can you give us an example of a phrase or word that you had to change so that it would be right in France?
I can give a funny example. So we transfer, we're now 13 years, I think, or just before the pandemic, we were celebrating our 10-year anniversary. And as we are, we're a very creative company, so we come with the creative sentences. And there was no French person joining the party because we just missed it with sending out the invites. I must say, it also took me a little while to understand the context of our invite, but it was something about, don't wash your hair, just come as you are. And we're just going to party. But don't wash your hair. That was where the French market stopped. And they were like, they love their good looks. And so that, and we didn't understand why they were not showing up, all of them, until after we asked, after the party, when we asked, like, what was it that held you back? And they were like, I want to wash my hair if I come. And it's so simple, but yet so clear that it's sometimes that global thinking or funny thinking doesn't necessarily work on the other side. So that is, it's a good insight. And the British people loved coming over. Not sure if they washed their hair, but they definitely had a good time. So it comes with a lot of nuance. We see it in the creatives that we build. We do see it in the wording. And we're now working on our conversions flow as well. Like, should it be longer? Should it be shorter? Like all those thoughts, all those thinking, comes with a lot of nuance. I can maybe find a few examples, but I need a bit of time. But it's interesting.
I don't mean to put you on the spot.
It's but fine.
That's a great example. And I always like asking those questions because everyone seems to have their war stories about the things that they did that totally went wrong. But I think just having an example helps people understand, okay, this is the kind of thing I need to be aware of. And then, of course, getting it right over time requires working with agencies or, you know, having that kind of nuance and understanding inside your own team, I think is pretty critical. Would you agree? Or how do you make sure that you get that part right as many times as you can so that, you know, maybe you work with an agency on one campaign and you get that one locally appropriate. But how do you set yourself up so that you are always communicating the right way in France?
So that's a good question. We had an event early this week with a very international setting. So there were 20 people in the room and they were from Brazil and Mexico, from Spain, Italy, India, South Africa and France all together. It was more us presenting to them, but then you get those really interesting conversations in how to work together. And we ended up talking about how I actually train my team. So every year, at least once a year, we go in depth into cultural differences and how to talk and how to behave. Because my team is also 45 people and I think almost 20 nationalities. I love building diverse teams because it's sort of like it gets the most out of it. And I know people are not trying to find proof points, but what I see happening is always that it's very intense conversations, very sharp. It's not always nice. And they have to get to learn how to work together. But then you get those beautiful, like more global approaches. But you also get a lot of feedback. And I think when I was at Facebook, it was, we asked each other for feedback as well. Like, what did I do wrong in this email? How could I have written this email better? And in general, it is, as I say, you just forget saying hi when you enter the door kind of feeling. Like, you have a question, so you say, hey, Ramsey, how are you? Can I get blah, blah, blah? And it's sort of like, maybe you can be a little bit nice and ask at least, Ramsey, how his weekend was. Sort of like, so now I'm taught really well by the French to sort of, write my email. And then I read it back. Then I read it with the friends in mind. And then I rewrite my email. It's a very small change, but it makes the difference in sort of approaching. So I need to teach my team. And we do that every year because it's also funny. And we have real life sessions almost. Like, you are the Italian sales guy now. And you are the French buyer. So what are we going to do together? And it's sort of like simulating what could happen. And then we read through the books, but we also ask our clients, like, it's very simple. Sometimes you just ask like, hey, how are we behaving, or what can we do better as a team? Because otherwise we base everything on assumptions. So it's within the team, we have the knowledge, but it's also good to do it externally. At the same time, honestly, I find it also tough, because like, why should we adjust to them? Why it could also be the other way around. But yeah, hey, we're selling. So in that case, I think slightly easier.
No, this is all good. I'm making lots of notes, and I'm going to circle back and ask you later about some concrete pieces of advice that you would give for a company who's starting the sales process, writing those first emails. So keep that in the back of your mind. But I want to move on to a question about prereqs and research. So there's all sorts of companies at different stages that want to go into France. What would you say is on the checklist of before you do that, you need to have done X, Y, and Z, and this is the kind of research that you need to have done before you go? What comes to mind?
So, well, next to figuring out what your competitive landscape looks like, and if you think there's a product and market fit, I think it's really good to understand how the workforce works in France.
Okay.
I think every country has its own nuances in how you can build a team, what legal requirements there are, what like kind of contract requirements there are. The French market tends to be really good towards all employees. So it's good to really make sure that if you hire someone, you're kind of stuck with them. To really make sure that it's the right person. But I think the other DD that you have to do is, if I start working in the market, it is good to start more hiring senior people instead of the less senior people, because you really have to build those networks. So I think it's really trying to figure out what kind of companies you want to address or who you want to work with, what kind of levels, kind of roles are there, and learn who to start with, who can build your network. So I think it's crucial to get your job description right, then understand labor law, and then start trying to find people who are based in the locations that you want them to be. We took quite a lot of time to find the first hires in France. And I think where we struggled was with writing the job description. So we're an international company, a global company, everything is English. But our job descriptions are not being picked up that easily by any search engine or job platform, it looks like. So now we're testing doing in both English and French. But I think it's even better to just work with a recruiter. So we now started to work with a recruitment agency who has, I'm not necessarily saying global knowledge, but at least an understanding of foreign companies who are looking for local people. And I think that's good to have that conversation, because that just can help you get starting. And then figuring out where your best, if you want to open an office, where to open the office. Paris is big. France is huge. So again, find that addressable market, map it out to see where the office should be. Just like I think a big city like New York can be hit or miss if you don't know the country. And I would recommend to spend time there yourself to really understand and get to know the country. I think it's easier sometimes to do it remote with one country than another. So people also understand you, and you need to get your buy-in ultimately. I think those are important things to do. There's definitely building an entity and all. I've amazing people helping me out there, but that also comes with nuances that are different. Just like with any other country, like get your taxes correct and right. But yeah, I think those are requisites next to what we spoke about, like which language to use, how to build it, test a lot, and take your time. It's not going to happen immediately. Definitely not. Long breath, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's so reminiscent of Japan, in that everybody's told up front it's going to take a while, be patient, but it's very hard to remain patient. I think companies are used to seeing things take off and grow really fast, but there are slow burn markets where relationships take time, trust takes time to build, and sounds like you'd agree this is one of those markets.
Well, this is, I think, where, like, if you're building your 2023 plans now, don't add a revenue line there. Like, start thinking 3-year plan to safeguard yourself. But it's also tough, because if you go into prioritization and you only have this much headcount, should you put it in France if there's no revenue line next to it? But the revenue line will be so much better the year after. But yeah, that's priority, I think. But we're going in. I took too much time to not have people on the ground because I do think you need people on the ground in France. But then when we made the decision, it was 2020, early stages. So we all know what happened then. But now we're going in.
And talking about language, so you mentioned job descriptions. There's all sorts of places where you're going to have to make a decision about, do you do this in French? Do you do this in English? Do you do this in multiple languages? Can you talk me through, in your opinion, if you're B2B, what part of the experience selling, reaching out to customers can be in French, could be in English, could be in either or both? And maybe also inside your company or with your team, are you hiring in French? Are you talking to your, can you speak with your teams in one common language, or do you have to do both languages? How does French language apply when you're going into France if you're B2B or B2C?
So I try to hire people that have, for any country, to be honest, in any language, that have a cultural savviness, preferably live there, but also live abroad, because we are a global company and we're putting together, like, I think on a company level, we have even more than 30 nationalities. So if people have lived elsewhere, even if I hire Dutch people, it gives that slightly better understanding in how the world operates. So I think it's not that I don't like people that never lived in another country. Also, obviously, I can work with that. But I think it's good to understand the nuance of a different culture. And it's just easier if you lived it yourself, even if it was a month or 2 months when you had a gap year. I think that's important. And I think for the French market, it's impossible as a team to all have, like, speak your own language. So we have that weird common language. And at Marktplaats, we back then had a GM who was from Italy. And we were talking about the fact that we are an English-speaking company. And he said, we're not. We're like a global company that speaks a common global language that sounds like English. But it's not very English because we don't have the nuance of those very nice, fancy words. So British people, and even people from the USMC, they need to adjust to the language that we speak. And that's actually true. Apparently, my vocabulary is like 3,500 English words and nothing more. That means I sometimes take a very long route to get to, like, explain a very nuanced word. But I think that's how you sort of, like, work together. And there's a little bit of German in it. There's a little bit of French in it sometimes because that hits the nail on the head much better. So you kind of build your own little language, I think. But then for the French market, you need them to speak French again. But I have so many nationalities now and they all speak Italian or French or German. So amongst each other, they do speak that their own language, which is really nice. But it's very easy to adapt to one language or the other by now. Although you sometimes have no clue what language you're speaking, to be honest, because it's so natural. If we go into France and meet with clients, we prepare up front. If there needs to be a very senior person in the room, they have to adjust to English because I don't speak the language. I can say hi and bye pretty much. And the same goes for the rest of the senior leadership team. So we really need to carefully think through, like, what's the topic of this meeting? Can we work with, do we need to have senior people in the room or not? Or can the rest of the team handle it? And that can be really tricky. So we're now going through 2023 planning. It comes with, like, rate card discussions and budget discussions. And that's not always easy because the French, those conversations are easier done in your own language, I think. So that is sometimes, or I'm in the room and only can follow half of it. But yeah, that is something you need to prepare really well. Don't expect the other side to understand you properly on the nuance of the conversation. I don't think that's necessarily France. I think in all the languages, like you mentioned Japan. Well, actually, Japanese people are very savvy, I think, when it comes to English, but still then, like, you speak a different speed and a different tone of voice. But I think that is something, particularly if you enter the market and if you go for big buildings and rent out space, like, you need to really understand the nuance. I guess also from a legal perspective, like, don't try to use Google Translate. Don't give it a go.
If you were running an event in France, would you do it in French only, French and English? Could you do it in just English? How would you run an event?
obviously depends on the event. Like if we join the bigger event, they're more international. So that's fine either way. But if you would indeed do a client event, a small intimate dinner, then you go back to that previous discussion, like what's the goal of the dinner? Who are we going to invite? And is it good to mix in the English language? Like, you don't want to hold people back, but at the same time, you also want to make sure that they know you. So it's table setting probably, but it's also, I think, I can fairly easily go there now because they know me. I kind of understand what to do, where to push and where not to push. And I'm perfectly fine with someone taking over in French. If sort of sometimes I have to tell my team what I want to sort of get across because they're stuck in the details. It's just preparation, I guess. That's the key thing. Like, who's out there? Who do you want to tackle? From a legal perspective, you have to have a French lawyer, I guess.
Okay. And contracts, if you were trying to sign up a big customer in France, does the contract need to be bilingual in French? Could it be in English?
It was actually just crossing my mind. We do everything in English, but it might actually be good to reconsider that when it becomes very detailed. I have a hard time reading terms and conditions in another language. So that might be something also from a company perspective to consider the localizing that part. Yeah, for now we do everything in English, more for our own preference, I guess, than the other side.
Well, thanks for indulging me. I had a lot of specific questions for you there, but yeah, I think when you get on the ground, those are the types of things that you wonder about and your team's going to be asking you for. And all those things cost money. And it's hard to decide when to hire a French lawyer, when to start doing, you know, contracts, website, collateral, everything in multiple languages. And, you know, there's the question always comes up, well, what can I get away with? And then at what point in my maturity cycle would I start investing in the next level of localization?
True. Yes, yeah. Well, that's totally true. Like we're scale up, so you have to make some shortcuts here and there. But at one point, and that's probably as a company, you always need to map out what's my biggest opportunity and where should I not invest? And it can be really, really expensive indeed. Well, everything legal is expensive, let's be fair. But all those nuances, that's also why we take it step by step. And only now start to really focus on localizing our platforms there as well.
This episode is brought to you by Globalization Partners. Many people assume that in order to enter a new country, you have to set up a new entity for your company, which can mean engaging in months of filings, years of investment obligations, legal fees, and a boatload of aspirin for all those headaches. That's a really heavy burden, especially if you're only hiring a few employees or if you're still testing a particular market. Globalization Partners invented a better way of hiring talent in other countries in 2012 that allows you to focus on hiring the talent you need and growing your company while they take care of the employment details. They provide locally compliant employee contracts, manage payroll, pensions, benefits, and a lot more as part of the package. And they cover 187 countries and 180 currencies. They offer all of this through their proprietary technology platform and provide experts you can call on when tricky situations come up anywhere in the world. And take it from me, these situations do come up frequently, and when they do, you want the most experienced people and the best technology behind you. For more information, visit globalizationpartners.com and choose the country you'd like to learn more about. Zooming out a little bit, let's say you're a company that's going into Europe, generally speaking. And I think U.S. companies often start in the U.K. because of the language similarity, culture similarity, also the market size. But thinking more broadly about going into the European market, where would you say France should be in order of priority or chronologically? When should you start thinking hard about going into France? I'll leave it there.
Yeah, good question. I'm still thinking about you saying like they start in UK because of cultural similarities. I don't necessarily see that, but I get the language part. I think, well, size-wise, there's a lot of huge countries in Europe. Like Poland is also like one of the, I think they're even bigger than France. But if you look at indeed the more Western countries, which are normally slightly more savvy from an economical point of view, that they're more stable. Well, when the world was a little bit more stable. So I think it should be high on your list. Obviously, depends on your servers or the product that you sell. But I think it's almost the second. Well, you have like UK, Germany, and France. Those are really big. The Netherlands in the middle. You never wrong to also start there because it's very international and it's quite a stable country. But I would say those three countries are the most important ones for most businesses. So it's size, it's savviness, and the money is there to spend. But then you also hit three countries in Europe that are so different in every sense of the way. So to your earlier point, it's all about your prioritization in investment, but those are the three main ones. Italy and Spain are huge. In my line of business, they're tough because TV is still big and very cheap in comparison with other countries. So and it's also very nuanced, but I think, those three are definitely the ones to start with. So it's a top three as far as I'm concerned.
Okay. And I it's always, you know, if you look at just GDP or the way that folks who run expansion typically think, on paper, it looks like you should go in very early. But when you start, you realize, oh, this is going to be hard and this is going to take a while.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where I was headed, was if you add up the Nordics or you see the opportunity in certain other areas, maybe not individual as countries, but if you start grouping and clustering, sometimes it feels easier to go into the Nordics, where English can go a lot further than like tackling this monolithic, difficult market of France. But I'm just curious, like, you know, maybe it's just a question of if you're prepared, you really know what you're doing, you would go into France sooner. But
well, if you take those three countries that I just mentioned again, you should actually start all at the same time, because the UK will be faster, Germany will be second, and then France will come. So if you do all three, then you have like a nice rhythm for 3 years. I think it's, to your point on Nordics, we were talking about it last week, I think, because it's not necessarily nice to be grouped as a group of countries. Like if you do the Netherlands, like the Benelux, is Belgium, Netherlands, and actually also Luxembourg, it's not the same country. Like it's, for you, it probably sounds the same because we speak similar language, we're connected to each other. But that cultural savviness is, it's literally, like I live next to the German border, like 80 meters, that's literally on the border. I know when I cross the border blindly. Like it's just, again, it's also the asphalt, but it's different people, different culture. So it's hard to group, but I know people do that and it makes sense on a cost perspective. But sorry, there was a side note.
No, it's a fair point. I like that you're challenging, especially, and I'll come back to a comment you made about the UK, whether it is truly culturally similar to the US, or tell me about the cultural differences. And then is there another market in Europe that if you were trying to optimize for starting in a place that's the most culturally similar, if not the UK, which market comes to mind?
Oh, that's a fair question, Beck. I think there's not a lot of other countries that are very similar. Arguably, maybe Ireland. I think a lot of Irish people moved to the US, so there must be some kind of similarity. And I think every tech company is based in Dublin these days. Well, that's another story, but it's a really interesting story how that started with four to move to Europe. But it's fair. Like from a language perspective, it makes sense. It's just a different flow, different personalities, different directness, if at all. So that in that sense, there might be something actually in what you call the Nordics. Or the Netherlands, but then you go into a much smaller space. Thanks for pushing that back to me.
No, I love this kind of discussion because there's a quote, I'm going to butcher it, but you know, the sort of, there's the quote about, you know, the US and the UK being, you know, two great nations separated only by a language, you know, meaning that, you know, we don't speak the same language, even though a lot of people think we do. There's quite a lot of even language localization that once you have the maturity and the budget, you should do between American English and, you know, UK English, and even further subdivided within the kingdom. But let me ask one last big topic, and then we can kind of get to some of the concrete tactical questions. But when it comes to hiring in France, you mentioned a really good point about, number one, you need to be aware of what level of seniority is going to be successful, and that people want to meet with people of similar levels of seniority, or you have to keep that in mind when kind of calling on customers. And that starting with a more senior hire there would make sense for the network and the relationships that they bring. Where's the best place that you have found to find good talent in France? And what are some of the expectations that French employees will have of you as an employer that you should be aware of going in, if there's any differences that come to mind?
I don't have the golden answer yet, I think, and where to find talent, but it also depends on the kind of talent you're looking for, probably. But it's probably centered around like the bigger area. So like obviously Paris and Lille and everything surrounding. I think it really comes down to the job description and managing expectations is really, really important. A couple of months ago, we hired someone more focused on Southern Europe. So she was not necessarily French, but close enough. Well, I'm also I'm not very much putting people in boxes. So my job descriptions and the roles I have normally are sort of you build it out yourself or scale up. So that comes with opportunity. But it was also very clear that we hired a very senior person and she came in with very high expectations and expected to have a team and everything sorted out. And in my head, that will come over time. And it was a clear mismatch in what was in the job description, how she translated it in her head and how I translated in my head. And that made me really aware that I need to be even better in writing the job description for the French market than I would do in the Netherlands, for instance. I think that the Dutch are much more in that sense. Sometimes I feel a little biased when I say these things, but more entrepreneurial. It's easier sort of to not live in that little box because that's also history, I think, and legacy. And I have to be more nuanced, more focused, more descriptive, I think, when I roll out my job descriptions in a French market, because they will really go into detail and also have the expectation that it will be ready to go. So I'd have to say it's not ready to go. You need to build it, but it needs to be more strict. And that probably also will result in a longer hiring process, but we hire for quality, not for speed. But that is something that I found definitely interesting and opened my eyes again as well. We're all learning still. Didn't nail it yet, but that's important. So I think what I need to do is actually read much more through existing job descriptions in French from companies that I actually know to understand how they do that. And that's also why we have a recruitment agency now to help us sort this out. But that was an interesting finding, and not the first time, to be honest. But that's always in hindsight, I guess.
Yeah. And you mentioned that when you hire someone in France, you're kind of stuck with people for a very long time, just given the laws.
Yeah. Doesn't sound nice. Sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. That's probably not the best way to phrase it, but, if you make a mistake when you're hiring, and it's very hard to correct that mistake in France compared to other places, are there any other things about the labor market that people should be aware of?
Well, I don't know yet. We now started to hire directly, so we'll find out. I think it also became a little bit more flexible over the last couple of years, so flexible, like more to average European standards. But in general, like, you need to hire the right people. And that's also why I said, like, it doesn't sound nice, but if you really start to build a team, you also learn if it's the right person, if it's the right time, if they have the right connections. It's easier if you have 5-6 people on the ground already. Right. That first hire is always the most crucial one. Now, I don't know that, Ramsey. I think it's just learn by doing and hopefully do that the best way possible. I think our job is now to make sure that we have the right expectations for the role and have a very good onboarding, but also, let's say, KPIs in place for this first couple of months. And because ultimately, like, you also don't want them to be stuck with us unexpectedly. So I think that's something we're going to learn in the upcoming months, which is nice and fun. But labor law across the world, how?
Yeah. Hiring is always the hardest part. It's one of the hardest parts anywhere. And there's always adjusting your own filters so that you can find what you're looking for in the context of a new place, a new language, a new labor market. And so, you know, on top of that, when the labor market, when it's hard to make corrections, that adds a lot of pressure, I think, to the hiring process and makes it that much harder.
It's also lengthier for that reason. Yeah.
And Natasha, I know we're almost out of time, so I wanted to kind of just ask you some concrete questions. I get a lot of questions from people that listen to the podcast about, okay, I hear sort of a lot of good advice, but if I'm very early in the process, what would you recommend as maybe some of the first 3, 4, or 5 steps that someone should take to get started if they're just at the very beginning of this? What would be good research tasks or things that come to mind if someone wanted to just get going on this and start in the right way?
You have to be patient. It won't come overnight. It also means you can take a bit more time to figure it out. So really go in more prepared than in any other country. to really understand the nuances. They're amazing. Like, obviously, the French is an amazing country, amazing people, but you want to do it right. And I just think it takes more time, and rightfully so, maybe, to correct the damage. So you really want to do it carefully. So go there, spend your, I don't know, a couple of weeks there, maybe a couple of times, different seasons, again, depending on your product, and then slowly build it up instead of going full force. I think if you don't understand the market and you have a nice, like, I don't know, let's say 10 million budget to blow away on campaigning and you mess it up, then that's just a waste of time. So I think if you really have the patience to take it slowly, you will win. And pull in the right resources. Like, don't read yourself and get familiar, but try to find a friend to speak with you. Could be anyone. That's also, if you spend a couple of weeks there, you get to know the people, or find the experts. There's so many experts out there that are more than happy to help you out. And don't mistake translation for localization.
That's a good one.
We have messed up quite a lot there. Yes.
Yeah, that's really good advice. Is there anybody in terms of agencies or recruiters or kind of third parties out there that you recommend that are really helpful to help you either get up to speed on the market or can help with some of those early localization efforts or campaigns? Any helpers come to mind that foreign companies should look into going in?
Yeah, definitely. So when I started in the French market, I worked with a company called WeGrow, not part of WeTransfer, but we start with the same letters. And they were amazing. So Florent has helped me build the Eiffel Tower strategy, as we call it. And he's been very helpful. And I know the WeGrow company helps everybody, a lot of particularly scale-ups that want to sort of go beyond their own market, particularly in Europe. And they have the French staff. They have people from Austria and from Germany and from everything. And they're really nice people. So I know them. So I would recommend them as a good starting point. And as I said, like, there are so many people in the market itself that would love to speak. So I guess that would be the second one. So yeah, if I can recommend anyone, it would be them. I'm more than happy to help out as well. Like, you can find me on LinkedIn or through you.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. Natasha, before we wrap up, is there anything else that comes to mind in terms of advice, hindsight, or if people wanted to get information, any resources you'd point people to besides WeGrow and some of the ones you mentioned?
No, I think it feels like I kind of built a huge mountain here to get into that country. But ultimately, you should definitely go there. I think, but I said, if you see it turns out really positive and you build those relationships, you feel it and you see it. And then it's the most amazing country, I think, to do business in, because there's that level of trust and fun, let's be honest. Like, you can have very good lunch and dinner there. So really give it a go. It's tough and you need to do it carefully, but it's definitely sunny on the other side. So do that. On the internet, there's so much to find. I think in the Netherlands would be TechLeap, and that can link you to any information out there. But there's a lot. And definitely the culture map from Erin Meyer. I don't know her, but it's definitely a good book to dive into and do some training yourself. So yeah, I think that you will be fine.
Plus one on that one. I've read the book, and I will link to that, to WeGrow, to all the other things that we talked about, so that people can check those resources out. Natasha, thank you so much for taking the time and sharing your experience. I know there's a lot to cover in just 1 hour, but I took lots of notes, and I'm going to try to get all these notes into the description so that people can build their own plans with the benefit of all this advice. Thank you so much.
Well, I loved having this conversation, and honestly, I made my own notes as well, but more and more questions come to mind for me to follow up. So thanks for this learning curve again. But thanks, Ramsey, and to everyone else. Have an amazing weekend.
Thanks again for listening to the International Expansion Podcast. If you found this information helpful, I hope you'll subscribe and share this info with a friend or colleague. As a reminder, if you or your company is looking for guidance on your international expansion journey, from sizing and prioritizing markets to getting up to speed on local conditions, finding world-class talent, or building up your brand and revenue, please visit portofentrypartners.com and send us a note. Until next time, take care.